Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Here we go. I'm playing the music, and I'll talk to you in a minute.
Alright. You are listening to The Mauer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business.
I hope everybody is doing well this evening. For those of you who are curious, it is October of 2021, and yeah, this kind of maybe. I don't want to give too much away. Let's get back to on purpose here. Just save that 15 seconds of indefiniteness for when things happen. There, I just predicted the future. So, or did I? I don't know. So stay tuned. But anyways, my guest tonight is Denver Michaels, who. Denver, how are you doing tonight? And then we'll get back into this whole returning, finally. But we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. It's good to be back on with you. It's on your show there a time or two, but it's been a while though. I don't really know how long, but it's been a good while since we spoke.
See, I did the math because, you know, I'm always curious because I always say, Denver will test this. Hey, Denver, I need to get you back on. Yeah, anytime, man, anytime. Hey, Denver, 6 months, a year will go by. Hey, Denver, I need to get you back on. Yeah, anytime, man. I'm good. So I looked it up. You were first on in 2017 by yourself, and then you were on with Chris George Zuger in 18, and it's been, well, that's been, what, four years ago. So yeah, time flies when you're having fun. So what you been up to, stranger?
Well, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's been 3 years since I talked to you. I mean, I don't know if it's just... you know, like the age that I'm at or what now, but you know, like a year goes by and it feels like literally like 3 weeks. You know?
I was going to say, I don't know. I'm not sure if the last year has felt like a year, a week, or 5 years. I'm never quite exactly sure. And a lot of Mandela effects are going to come out of this period of time.
Yeah, I guess it just depends. Yeah. But for me, man, the last year and a half, you know, it's been kind of a turbulent time, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, make light of that at all, but it's been pretty good for me. You know, me and the old lady, we sold our house, last year. You know, we got the last kid, through college, made our last tuition payment, and we're just kind of like, screw it. Let's do something crazy. Let's sell our house and almost every single thing we own, and we bought an RV, and we're just living in an RV, traveling the country right now.
Yeah, because I heard you on with Everett and Kim on Extension 13. I see now this is where this is going to get in trouble, because I didn't bother to look that up, because it seems like a couple weeks ago, but I know it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, I think that was probably back around March, April, May. Yeah, somewhere, you know, I don't know exactly. It was a few months ago, but it literally doesn't seem like that long ago, though.
Man, I'm doing good then. That's how great.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I totally understand where you're coming from with all that. But yeah, when I was talking to them, I was out in the middle of Utah somewhere, and so. You know, the problem has been also like doing a podcast or doing, you know, radio or whatever, depending on where I'm at in the RV, you know, Wi-Fi can kind of be a challenge. So that's luckily then, and like right now with you, I've got a little bit of Wi-Fi, so I'm good.
So where are you tonight? Well, you don't have to give very specifics, but I'm curious because I think I do know, but it leads to a question. So
I'm in right now, let's see, I don't know exactly. I'm in like northeastern Ohio, you know, kind of not real far from Cleveland, but not real. I'm like kind of like getting pretty close to the PA border. Probably 20 minutes from Lake Erie.
You're not that far from me tonight, actually. Then, if you're in that neck of the woods,
what part of Pennsylvania? I know you're from PA, but I'm not.
I'm from Western Pennsylvania. I'm up northwestern Pennsylvania, so you're literally not that far from me right now.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, it's a nice part of the country. We were out west, and we decided to come back to Virginia for the holidays, and so. You know, what happens up in this part of the country, you know, it starts getting cold and, things start shutting down. So we left Montana, a couple months ago, and we kind of like slowly been working our way back and kind of did like a tour of the Great Lakes. And now we're, up around Lake Erie, and I'll be getting back to Virginia sometime in November.
Yeah, I was going to say, as I always tell people, if you're in my area, you're lost.
Yeah, it's kind of nice where I'm at here. It's and that's kind of like the thing with having a house on wheels. You end up going to these places that you never, like literally there's no real reason to like fly out there and visit for a week, but you end up in these places like where I'm at now and staying for a couple weeks, and it's nice. You like it. There's all these covered bridges and the leaves are changing, so it's really pretty. But if I wasn't living on the road, I probably never would have been here.
Yeah, I was gonna say. And actually, I do joke, but the Allegheny National Forest probably would be an interest for you because, well, there's a million acres there, and there's a few stories that go around that place, which isn't that far.
I can imagine.
From it. But, okay, so besides Lake Erie, have you been to any of the burial mounds in Ohio?
Yeah, I haven't really a whole lot on this RVing trip. Most of the ones I visited were actually before I started RVing, down in southern Ohio. But the other day I did find a little place that I don't know how you say it, Ashtabula County, something like that. But there's not mounds there anymore, but there used to be. And I visited that site, and actually there were some pretty cool legends right around that area, like on Conneaut Creek there, about these giant burials, giant bones that have been found in the area. And I'm kind of looking for some other places nearby that might have some mounds, but I have visited a lot of them in the southern Ohio and like around the Columbus area too.
It's just that whole phenomenon fascinates me, because I'll freely admit this to you, and my listeners have probably heard this before and they're probably tired of hearing this, but it just goes like the pyramids. Like, yeah, great, you can do it, right? I can't do it. I am far too lazy to do that. Far too lazy. Even with the benefits of modern equipment, I'm far too lazy to build a big mound.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like the thing that, all of these places that I've visited and these mounds, they're pretty much everywhere, or I don't want to say everywhere, but, like in the eastern U.S. especially, they're pretty much everywhere or have been almost everywhere. Like where I'm from in Virginia, there's not really any left to see, but at one point, there were, and you don't even know how many used to be there. And some of these, especially like in Ohio, some of these are just enormous. Just massive. I visited that Miamisburg mound, and it's like so tall, I'm in decent shape, but you literally get winded walking up the thing. It's so tall, and it just strikes me. Yeah, it's not that complicated of an engineering project, I guess. So you wouldn't really need any major technology. You just need baskets and. Baskets upon baskets of dirt and, I guess buckets of water. But, you know, the question that I always just come away with these things is why? Why in the world would, you know, like a lot of these earthworks, not just the mounds, but there's like all these embankments and hinges and things like that. You know, when you would literally, like, if you were one of the workers working on this project, you'd start working on it, you know, maybe you're 15, 16 years old, and you'd be working on that thing till you're dead, right? And then, you know, generations after, you would still be working on them. And it's just like, why? Why would people, I just can't figure out, why was it so important, you know, to put all that energy and effort in these things?
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking, as you say, that generations, and then I look at the sign that I made myself over here, and it took me an afternoon, and I probably should have stopped, but I wanted it done, so, you know, now it's done, and
Yeah. It's
not done as well as it should be, because I started getting cranky with it, and, you know, but there it is, that afternoon, right, like, it's going to be done now, like I started, and then we're sitting here talking about generations of people never seeing that finality of the project being done, and doing it for days and years, and I'm like, see, this is another reason I just can't do it. And the other thing that gets me about these is you hear all the stories about them using all the pieces of the animal and all this other stuff, and then they go to all this trouble for their ancestors. And it seems I've never put those two pieces together. Maybe they don't go together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that really puzzles me, and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there, you know, that study these things and talk about how the mounds were and some of the earthworks and were associated in a lot of ways with some of your celestial alignments and you know, some of the beliefs in how your soul travels in the afterlife and that sort of thing. But I mean if it had that sort of significance, that these things were maybe necessary in ceremonies, as far as helping the soul go to the afterlife or next place, I can kind of see it. But still, I mean, you know, I think of myself and I don't know, man. I don't know if I can keep carrying those baskets, you know, when it's 92 degrees out and it's, you know, 60% humidity and, you know, mosquitoes are tearing me up. And I just have to, I don't know, you know, how they didn't just say, look, man, there's got to be a better use of my time than this.
It also makes me wonder, because you're moving all that dirt and there has, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder if there was a secondary reason that we're not thinking about to move all that dirt. Like, we're I feel like we're missing something. But, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we might be. I mean, like, a lot of those in the early days, a lot of the theories, especially, like, your embankments and you know, your ditches and all that, a lot of people think or used to think that they were more like defensive in nature, and in some ways you can kind of see that, but I don't know, still even if that were the case, that's you're talking just enormous amount of work, like those that I went to in Ohio near Columbus, the Great Circle Earthworks. I mean, that you got these embankments that are covering, like, you know, like a 5 acre or more, you know, in some cases. I mean, they're just enormous. The scale of them is enormous. And what you see today is only just a small portion of what, you know, what used to be out there. And then, you know, what we don't know, you know, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know, you know, how many, you know, were here, you know, when the original European settlers came over, you know, like where I'm from in Virginia, you know, that was one of the first places settled. So naturally, any, you know, a lot of your mounds there, you know, would have been plowed up for farmland and things. And so there might not even be any record of a lot of those.
Yeah, and I was going to say, how many do we just not know were what we were doing when we were building on top of them or bulldozing them over.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of them, you know, I've seen, you know, a lot of them, they, you know, they got trees growing out of them and things like that. And, you know, if you let them grow up long enough, right, I mean, they're just, you know, they just will kind of blend in with the, you know, with the surroundings. And you know, when the settlers did come over, I mean, there were no, or at least, you know, for the most part, I don't think there were any, you know, cultures really building mounds anymore. You know, these were, for the most part, they were ancient. And a lot of the area tribes, you know, they were like, hey, these things were here before us, you know.
So take me back. Take me back to Virginia. I know you have a newish book about, well, a couple newish books about Virginia, huh?
Yeah. Back in April, had a book released, the History Press published it, called Strange Tales from Virginia's Mountains. And then in August, I had a, also by the History Press, they published a book I wrote called Haunted Shenandoah Valley. And that was actually the first book that I've written that just deals exclusively with ghost stories and haunting. So that was kind of a first for me. But the Strange Tales from Virginia's Mountains, that was kind of a fun book. It's divided into three parts. You know, the first section, I talk a little bit about some of your cryptids and monster stories. Then I talk about just some, you know, some strange and obscure history, you know, in another section. And then the last section, it's just kind of miscellaneous stuff. I talk a little bit about, you know, how the Shenandoah National Park and its formation, you know, some of the eminent domain that took people's homes from them. You know, a lot of little, like, tidbits that people might not necessarily know.
So one of the names that, I can't remember which book it was in. You're going to have to correct me because I scribbled the name down because it meant something to me. And it's an interesting stories around this man, which is John Brown. Because not too far from me, well, far enough, but not that, you know, in the big picture compared to life, it's not that far from me, is his old tannery before he took off west and then,
oh, wow, know,
went west and then came back east and, well, may or may not have started the war.
Yeah.
That's another discussion for another day.
He might have had a little bit to do with it.
Well, like I said, it depends on who writes that history, how much he had to do with that or not. But
yeah, who you ask?
Yeah, but he's all, like I said, it was fascinating, like especially when he was here, because he was kind of, I get the feeling that, like when he left, he kind of knew he was up to something. Some of the reports I've read that they were glad that he was leaving.
Yeah,
take that for what it's worth. And then he went out west, and apparently, I don't know, man. That guy's got a story, and I know it's been told several times, but it's always fun for me to get into a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, John Brown, you're right, he's an interesting character, and, you know, in my book, Haunted Shenandoah Valley, you know, I talk a little bit about John Brown because there's just a number of, you know, hauntings and ghost stories, you know, the kind of things that you would expect, right, from a historical figure and, you know, a controversial historical figure at that. I mean, even if, you know, he's largely, you know, looked at favorably, you know, for the most part, but even among those that look at him favorably, you know, like his methods, I guess, were, you know, some people might kind of question some of his methodology, I guess, you know. You know, he's been spotted, you know, like his ghost has supposedly been spotted in all of these places, you know, where he used to roam. He led the, the raid on Harper's Ferry in 1859, and I think that's kind of what you're talking about. A lot of people, you know, considered that to be the, you know, after that, you know, kind of like war was inevitable kind of thing. And, you know, so you have a lot of reports in Harper's Ferry of people seeing his ghost. But also, you know, over in Charlestown, West Virginia, which was Virginia back in the day, that's where he was hanged. And, you know, you have reports of John Brown sightings and things over in Charlestown. And, you know, he planned his raid at a small cabin over in Sharpsburg, Maryland. And you know, any of your listeners might not be familiar, but Maryland, West Virginia, and Virginia, like, all come together. So you're talking, like, you know, the way the crow flies, you know, just a very small radius. But nevertheless, that cabin, the Kennedy Farmhouse, where he stayed while he was planning his raid on Harper's Ferry, that's associated with a lot of hauntings that are attributed to Brown and his raiding party. And I've always just thought it's interesting. And I've also heard, you know, he had a farm in York. I've heard of, you know, like John Brown ghost sightings up there too. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, this one man, there's all these ghost stories attached to him, you know, spanning several states.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's actually how I got into the story, because the Tannery site is supposedly haunted too. And what was that, the Shadowlands back in the day? You know, had all these haunted places listed out.
Yeah, well, that website's still up, and it's, you know, it's, you kind of take a lot of things on there with a grain of salt, you know, but yeah, and you know, I would venture to guess, I don't know, but you know, when Brown went out west, out to Kansas, you know, him and some guys massacred some you know, pro-slavery people out there, hacked them to death with broadswords. And then plus he was, you know, he was involved in, you know, in a battle out there with, you know, some of the guys from pro-slavery factions from Missouri. So I wouldn't doubt that there's, you know, I've not looked into it, but I would say out in Kansas, there's probably some John Brown ghost stories out there too.
I would imagine there's some people upset with him.
Yeah.
Might be a few.
There probably are. I mean, he was definitely, you know, he was definitely, you know, militant and what he said, he just come to the point where he believed that, you know, as far as, you know, the slavery issue and that sort of thing, that, you know, there was just no turning back. There was going to be blood. It wasn't going to end until blood was going to be spilled. And I forget his exact quote. I think I put it in my book, but, you know, writing in a letter to his wife before he was hanged. But, you know, basically he just believed that, you know, nothing was going to change until blood was spilled. And he just, you know, he just, I guess, signed up for, you know, kind of signed up to get it rolling, I guess.
So, smooth radio segue coming here in 3, 2, 1. Let's talk about lake monsters.
Okay.
Oh, that was bad. That's as close as I could get to getting them in, because I'm fascinated by them, because the swamp near me, the bigger swamp near me, supposedly has a ginormous, well, this is, I've never seen it, so, you know, I've heard this story a couple different times with different people, turtle in it. Like, probably, I'm going to give you the median story here, that's about 6 to 8 feet in diameter. I've heard them. And I've got news for you. Well, it's a big swamp. You would notice something that big in it, I believe. But there's stories out there of him tipping over boats and all this other stuff, so I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, you get those stories, you know, out in Indiana, there's, you know, the beast of Busco. You know, like in the 40s, there was a turtle out there, and I would call it more of a pond than a lake, but I guess you could call it a small lake. And people describe that thing as you know, being as big around like as the hood of a car, or like the top of a Volkswagen. And the guy that owned the land, he attempted to drain the pond, you know, to find this thing, and you know, people were coming from all around to try to, you know, get a glimpse of this big turtle. And you know, like the, you know, his pump, you know, screwed up on him and all this stuff. And long story short, you know, he didn't totally get his leg drained. Nobody found the turtle. But I mean, you know, these big turtle stories, there's a few of them out there. You know, out in one place I visited, not on this RVing trip, but a couple of years ago, was Bottomless Lakes out in Roswell, New Mexico. And these lakes, there's like 8 or 9 lakes in this state park, and they're basically sinkholes, you know, like these limestone sinkholes that are filled up with water. And there's a story there of a turtle that you know, has been described as the size of a Volkswagen, and you know, nobody's ever found it or found anything conclusive, but you know, there are a few of those turtle stories out there.
So a Germantown runner pops up here: what's the most popular cryptid near you in Virginia, and have you ever seen it? That'd be the Jersey Devil. No.
I guess, you know, the most popular cryptid. I mean, I think you always got to say Bigfoot's the most popular cryptid, right? I mean, no matter what, no matter where. I mean, that's always going to be the one seed for folks. You know, there are some, Virginia, there are a few, more than a few, actually, supposed sheep squatch sightings. And, you know, your listeners could, you know, kind of piece together what that is, right? It's, it's a cross between, a sheep and a Sasquatch. And there have been a few of those, especially in southwestern Virginia, like I think down around the Lynchburg area, around Patrick County and down that way. And even over, you know, kind of closer over to the West Virginia line, there's been a few of those. I've personally never seen anything like that. I've never seen a Bigfoot, you know, for that matter. But there are some strange stories like that out there.
No, but what's the regional thing down there? Because I was joking about the Jersey Devil, and then you've got Mothman over West Virginia.
Regional, there would be, it's like a variation of Bigfoot. They call it the wood booger, like down in, southwestern Virginia, like down in, Wise County, Lee County, down kind of where Virginia meets up with Tennessee and Kentucky. That's kind of a regional deal. I guess one of your regional deals too for Virginia would be devil monkeys. Your best, you have supposed devil monkey sightings all over, but Virginia is where all of the best reports come from. Like in Smith County, there's since the 50s, there's been sporadic reports, just of these freaking monkeys that are mean and like attack people and stuff. And also over in Goochland County, near Richmond, I think as recently as maybe like 5 years, 5, 6, 7 years ago, there were some sightings there. So Virginia is kind of, I think, your leader in the clubhouse as far as like devil monkeys go. And, you know, if you're talking kind of more regional.
So you've been at this cryptid game for a while. What's the strangest one you've heard about?
Oh, God. I mean, there's just... Gosh. I mean, you know, like we were just talking about sheep squatch. I mean,
I was gonna say that is pretty good, but I figured if there had to be one, there almost has to be one better than that, though. That we're just,
Oh god, I mean, and then too, I mean, like when you're talking cryptids, I mean, I guess technically a cryptid would be like an undiscovered animal, but some of these weird creatures, you know, you don't think could really even exist in nature. So you wonder if that's something more like in the, I guess, metaphysical realm, you know. But, gosh, what? I mean, your strangest thing, I mean, you know, I've heard all kinds of things. I mean, I read a lot of reports of pterosaur sightings and in like populated places, like, you know, outside of just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina and Raleigh-Durham area. You know, certainly I wouldn't rule out that something like that could exist, but, you know, you wouldn't think that it would be flying over Raleigh. Right, I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I was gonna say that is pretty crazy. So now that you've kind of been out and about, and really out and about, more so in the last year or so, is there a region of the country that strikes you as somewhere? Because you're from Virginia, you know what I'm gonna say here. Like this region to us, this northeast region, seems like it's the most cryptid, the most haunted, the most whatever. Like we've got it locked down, and we're it. Of course, we're a little biased when we say that, right? Because everything we hear is from around us. Is the West Coast as active, for the lack of a better word at this point, but we're just not paying attention to it because it doesn't affect us?
I mean, I think that could be. I've not really spent too much time in the West Coast, but I spent a lot of time in... you know, in Utah and Arizona, back in earlier part of the year. And, you know, there are a lot of strange things out there. I mean, they do have, you know, just as many Bigfoot sightings and things like that. They've got the UFOs, you know, when you're at a town, out that way, they've got the haunted hotels and all that good stuff. And you know, of course, a lot of that is, you know, more associated with a lot of your what do I want to say, like your old west type stuff. You know, I guess out where we're from, out on the east coast, it's been settled so long, I guess, or you know, people have been living out there so long that there seems to be a little more history. But out west, especially like Utah, Arizona, I think it's kind of cool, like a lot of the petroglyphs and things out there. There's just so many sites with all these petroglyphs, and you know, some of those figures drawn on the walls and stuff, to me, it would indicate that these ancient people were certainly seeing some strange things. I mean, I've seen these ghostly looking figures. You know, I saw some petroglyphs out in Vernal, Utah, where I mean, clear as day, these figures had, it looked like they were wearing welding helmets or something. And you know, a lot of them have these, like, looks like helmets with antennas and things like that. And you know, just these really weird figures. And even in Utah, I guess one of the things that, you know, really struck me when I was in Utah is I saw a petroglyph in at Natural Bridges National Monument at the Kachina Bridge, and it's one that I'd known about and had been looking for a long time, or you know, had been wanting to see. for a long time. And, I mean, I swear to God, it looks exactly like a long-necked dinosaur. And, you know, that begs the question, you know, what were these people drawing? I mean, what were they seeing? What was the model for this?
Yeah, that's the strange thing. I mean, because there was no science fiction or any of that other stuff to kind of seed their mind. So, I mean, everything else they were drawing is stuff they were seeing. Animals,
yeah,
and people.
You would think so. Yeah, I mean, you would think so. And I, you know, it's just like, and some of the figures, like this one place, about 30 minutes outside of Moab, Sago Canyon. Anybody that's ever watched Ancient Aliens has probably seen these figures before they show them. But, I mean, they are just bizarre looking. I mean, they kind of look like, you know, these weird gray aliens almost. And then, you know, there was like this wall that the petroglyphs, they were like, you know, maybe like 5 feet tall, you know, humanoid figures. And like this one, like, had horns coming out, like actual horns coming out of its head. I mean, just really creepy, disturbing, you know, looking figures. And, you know, I've always kind of been a proponent that the ancient people, you know, drew these things because they saw them, you know, the same way that they drew, you know, deer and sheep and that sort of thing. And you just wonder, like, what in the heck, you know, what were they seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know. It's fun to think about because...
It's fun to think about, but it's also, I mean, it's a little bit troubling. I mean, if you really look at these things and, like, how bizarre and frightening it would be to, you know.
Yeah,
to,
well, that's true too. Like, you know, I guess I never put my those shoes on. I guess maybe if I did for a minute, that you'd be right.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is strange. And so to me, I mean, you know, like places like Arizona, Utah, they, you know, it's just as weird, you know, as it is on the East Coast, but maybe some of the things are just kind of like different weird, if that makes any sense.
It always makes sense around here, or it doesn't. I don't know. You know how this goes around here. Okay, I look at the clock, and I realize that if I don't do this in this moment while I'm thinking about it, we'll be out of time, and I'll be kicking myself, and you'll hate me. Well, you probably won't hate me, but give me the website and... You know, I know all the books are available on Amazon, but you can you can run through those again and all that fun stuff.
Okay, yeah, sure. My website, denvermichaels.net. I also have a blog on my website. I put out an article, you know, once or twice a week. Find my books on Amazon. I've got a YouTube channel. Just look up
Denver. I'm gonna interrupt you there because Kim sent me a YouTube video you posted today about the Grand Canyon. So. We'll come back to that in a minute. For the record.
Yeah, I got a YouTube channel with, you know, 3 or 4 subscribers. certainly not a big thing I got going, but I do put a few little YouTube videos up once in a while, and once in a while I'll post something. You know, when I'm traveling, if I go to a cool site or something, I'll try to film a little video. And Twitter and I got a Facebook page.
So that kind of leads me to a question that Everett asked me to ask you. Your books have great photos in them that you took yourself. Has that become something that you took upon yourself to learn how to do, or is it just luck?
No. So that's one of the things. Like, I've kind of it's something I kind of slowly grew into, I guess. Like the first book I did, pretty much had no pictures. And, you know, some of the feedback I got from my first book, you know, was, you know, there's no pictures, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I mean, my first book, you got to understand, it was my first book. So, yeah, it kind of sucks. It's kind of learning how to get back into writing and all that stuff, you know, because I had a job where, you know, I'd maybe write an email once a week, you know. So, you know, it kind of took a while to get in the groove. But as I kind of went along my next book, I kind of actually had a few original pictures, you know, that I'd taken in Peru. And then as I got going, you know, I think by my third book, my West Virginia book, I think I put like 20 or 30 pictures in there. And I was getting great feedback on that. I mean, people really love the pictures. And, you know, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, trying my best to make this a thing that as much as I'm able, you know, anything I'm writing about or any place that I'm writing about, if it's, you know, feasible at all, I'm going to try to get some original pictures, you know? And so that's something I've, you know, really worked hard to try to do. And I've logged a lot of miles on my car, you know, doing that, but I think it, you know, it's really kind of paid off, you know, with a lot of the feedback that I've gotten.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, especially in this technology-based age, we're used to having everything we want at our fingertips. Or is that just me? I guess I shouldn't lump everybody together.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, I kind of at first, you know, when you get a little bit of the criticism, you know, of course your initial reactions, you know, to get all butthurt over it and, oh, that person don't know what they're, you know, but then, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, when I'm reading a book, you know, a nonfiction book, I, you know, it is kind of nice when you've, you know, got a picture to look at that's, you know, that of a certain place, you know, it just kind of, yeah, it kind of brings that extra dimension, I guess. And, you know, kind of helps you with your visualization of, you know, what the writer's talking about. So I've kind of made that a real point of emphasis, you know, moving forward.
So I want to ask you this because you've been doing it and it just fascinates me. So tell me about living in the RV. Like, I mean, we've kind of roamed around all these paranormal topics, but the RV thing kind of gets me because it's gotta be so freeing on one hand, but so, I don't want to say troubling on the other hand, but I can't think of the yang because it's not like horrible, I'm sure, but there are times I'm sure it's a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, it's, so I'll put it like this, like, this is the most free, you know, I've ever felt in my life, right? But having that freedom, you know, it brings a whole set of challenges. I mean, what we found that we didn't expect, you know, with everybody, especially last year, and into this year some, with, you know, with everybody being off work because of COVID and all this stuff, you had a lot more people buying RVs and even a lot of people renting them. And so it's kind of been a challenge sometimes. We've had to do a lot of really intense planning, and I credit my wife with all that. I mean, she handles all that, and she does an excellent job. But it can be challenging finding places to stay, you know, keeping your, you know, I'm not working the 9-to-5 job anymore. So, you know, money's a challenge, right? So, you know, trying to keep that budget where you need it to be, and to keep that budget where you need it to be with all these rising prices. I mean, that's been a challenge and things like that. But, It's been so rewarding. It's been so wonderful to, you know, to just see all these different places. And I mean, we're loving it, but, it's not all, fun and games. You know, as you can imagine, I don't even have a house. I mean, this RV, this is it. So, I mean, I don't have no place to go home to anymore. So, you know, we're just kind of out here. There's no safety net, and you just have to really be flexible, adaptable, that sort of thing. And you know, just got to be you kind of got to be able to roll with it, you know.
So, without getting either of us in trouble, because this is where this part of the interview goes sideways for both of us in a hurry. But, I mean, we both will love our lives immensely. But, the pandemic has put us together more, and of course you've doubled down on that by moving in an RV. You got any tips on that one? No.
Yeah, I do, actually. And here's what I'll say. I mean, you know, me and my wife, we have a great relationship, and we always have. I mean, you know, we've never had any, you know, in the 15, 16 years we've been together, we've never had any, you know, any real problems other than just, you know, the BS and the drama from kids, you know. So, you know, so we've got a good, healthy relationship. But I'll tell you, that said, you know, the walls can close in pretty quick. you know, when you're together every single day, and like, you know, like I'm sitting out here on the dinette, which double, you know, where we eat our dinner, and what doubles is my office, you know, for writing and doing my podcast. And when I do a podcast, my wife has to go in the bedroom and shut the door. And, you know, like, you know, the walls can close in really quick. So what the advice that I would give to people, and I can imagine that there's a lot of people that have found this out. You know how people will think, you know, if we could just get away from the distractions of family and the distractions of the kids and working and, you know, just be together in an RV, you know, our romance will be stronger. And it won't. It won't. If you're having any kind of trouble and, you know, you think that, you know, you're going to grow closer, living in an RV, traveling the country, just forget that. You know, it's just not going to happen. But, you know, me and the wife, we're fine. You know, we still, you know, get our alone time. You know, I'll sometimes go on some hikes by myself, or she'll go do this by herself or things like that. But I couldn't imagine doing it without her. You know, it can be challenging at times, but you know, it's, to me, in this lifestyle, you really kind of need to have a partner. You need somebody to, you know, to help you, and somebody to bounce ideas off of and that sort of thing.
So based off this, this question came up in the chat room, so I'm going to ask you, but I think I know the answer. You're not towing a car with you?
We are, yes. No. I've got a motor home, and we tow a Honda CRV.
Nice. My first car was a CRV, so.
Yeah, I've got an old 2014 CRV. That was like the last year that you could flat tow behind an RV. So what we did when we sold our house, we actually had a Honda Accord, and you know, we would have had to buy like a dolly and all that to tow it. And we're like, you know, let's get a CRV, and that way we'll have something with all wheel drive. So we found one with, you know, like 70,000 miles on it, and that's what we did.
Great decision. No.
Yeah, no, we're loving it. It's been a great car, and that's what you see. Like almost all your RVers either have like a Jeep and an Equinox or a CRV.
And Honda, I expect the check to be in the mail any minute now.
Yeah. This segment sponsored by Honda.
Oh, no, I miss mine. I have a Toyota now, but it's still as good, but I don't know. Now my mind's, you know, now we're talking about cars. See, this show really does just kind of scatter throughout everything. So anything else you're going to venture back across as you're going back to Virginia? Picked out?
Yeah. So we'll let's see here. We'll be in PA for a couple weeks, and then we'll be in Virginia for I guess the bulk of November and December, and then after Christmas we're once Christmas rolls around, we'll start working our way down to Florida. You know, where we'll kind of stay till it warms up. And I like Florida anyway. Florida's a cool place. It's you know, it's kind of a fun place to be. We spent a few months there last I guess back in last October, November, after we moved, we actually went down to Florida, and we don't have a house or anything, so we had to become residents of somewhere, and it's pretty easy to do that in Florida. And plus in Florida you don't have to pay no taxes or nothing, so we registered all our stuff in Florida, and I'm a Florida man now.
Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it?
You'll be reading about me doing something stupid on the internet.
I was going to say, at this point, all the pieces came together, and this whole show makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, you have free range, obviously. But this question came. I have a lot of listeners in Canada. Of course, the border has been closed. I don't know if it's open today or not. That fails on my part, but... are you going to venture to the north eventually?
Yeah, so that's kind of like our plan. You know, after we're going to hang out in Florida, you know, since we're on the East Coast, right, for, you know, to come back for the holidays, you know, going to hang out in Florida. And plus my daughter, she's stationed there. She's in the Air Force. She's stationed down there, and she's got a... you know, a little son. So, you know, my grandson, we're going to, you know, try to visit with him and spend a little time in Florida. And then once the weather warms up, you know, north of there, we're going to head up and go through New England and all that. And yeah, we do hope to go into Canada. I don't know what it's going to look like or anything like that. You know, we were up on the Canadian border when we were in Minnesota and Michigan, but you know, you had to be fully vaccinated. You had to quarantine for I think 2 weeks. You know, and we just wanted to go over there and buy some
maple syrup and
yeah. I mean, I don't want to go through a bunch of BS, you know. I just want to do some sightseeing. So we figured, you know, we'll see what it looks like, you know, at 2022.
Watch a hockey game, but eat some maple syrup. I'm trying to think of some more Canadian puns to make them upset.
Yeah.
if I die from a hockey puck, you'll understand.
Yeah, I've never been to Canada. My wife's been to Canada. I've never been, so I mean, it's something I really would like to get over there. But you know, things have just been kind of weird with the COVID stuff. You know,
closest I've ever been is Niagara Falls.
Okay, you didn't go across the border then.
They wouldn't let me be in a barrel either. I don't quite understand. Man, there were some people back in the day. Let me tell you. Yeah. We were talking about cryptids. I'm sure you've seen some of those people. Oh, you're a Florida man, so you understand these people. Maybe I'm talking to the right guy.
Yeah. Some great stuff.
I can't imagine. Well, being from Virginia, I can't. I mean, there's that stereotypical West Virginian. Stereotypical, guys. Calm down. I didn't call you all. Well, anyways, I'm not gonna go there because that's just gonna Denver. I'm trying to get myself in trouble here. You better start saying something.
You're gonna get a bunch of hate mail
from Canada or West Virginia, which comes first? Oh man, so you're out and about, doing all this research and trying to blog and trying to do videos. You still having fun doing all this stuff?
Yeah, I am. You know, it's like you know, working on my books, videos, the blog, all that stuff. You know, when I have downtime, and you do have some downtime, and you have to have some downtime, or else you'll get burnt out really quick. If you know, if you're moving too fast, it can kind of kill the fun of it. So, but with that said, you know, if you're camped out in a place for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, it might not be the most exciting place, it's good to have you know, that time to kind of get caught up on you know, my books and my blog and all that. And that's kind of what I do is, you know, I might be a week or two, you know, with sightseeing and traveling, and I don't really get to do much work. But then, you know, when I have a little downtime, you know, I just kind of like work really hard for like a week, and then, you know, then kind of take a few days off for sightseeing.
Well, you hear you're headed to Pennsylvania, so enjoy the downtime.
Well, or Virginia. I'm like, man, you know, it's like, oh God, I just kind of been wrestling with, you know, you do want to see some family and stuff, but then it's like, man, I don't want to go back to that place. I want to be back in Arizona or somewhere. You know?
He'll have his countdown timer set.
Yeah. My wife, you know, she's just kind of been joking. It's like, man, once we get back to Virginia, you are going to be unbearable. And I'm like, yep, you're right.
You'll be out there looking for the monsters and...
Yeah, I'll find something to do. I'll probably do some trout fishing and, you know, kind of visit some of my old, you know, I used to have some good places I like to hike and, you know, things like
wait,
that.
Wait, did he just say hike or hide? I'm not sure which way that went.
Hike.
Roll the tape back.
Maybe hide. Who knows?
Well, I mean, Bigfoot is the hide and seek champion. So, I mean, if you hide, I mean...
Yeah, and there's a lot of sightings in some of the old places I used to like to hike, and even some of the places I used to do a little trout fishing. There's you know, Bigfoot sightings and things. So and, you know, who knows what I'll get into when I get back home.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get into trouble. I mean, that's a given.
No doubt.
Oh, man. It has been fun catching up with you, and here's the old traditional line that I say this, and Denver, you're going to have to hold me to this. I've got to get you back on sooner than the last time.
Well, you know how quick the years go, but yeah, anytime, man.
And when you get your Pennsylvania plans nailed down, let me know, and maybe we can cross paths or something.
All right, man. Cool, man.
I mean, Pennsylvania is a big state. I got to warn people, you know. But if you're in Ohio, your odds of you going past me, at least I'll wave at you as you drive by, are pretty good.
Yeah, honk at you as I ride by.
Yeah, like I said, if you're in my area, though, you're truly lost. But there is some cool history up the road, but that's, you know, here or there. But oh man, well, I appreciate you immensely for hanging out with us tonight, and go and make a s'more or something. I don't know.
Will do.
Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy.
That's Denver Michaels there on the Mauer Report. I kicked him, or tried to. Let's see if Skype even listens. There, Skype listens. Kicked him off a minute or so early just because I wanted to talk to y'all for a minute. Kind of hemmed and hawed about some things at the beginning of the show. And I'm going to hem and haw here for another minute about things. A lot of things are changing right now, and it's not going to change anything, but it's going to change everything. Very good job of hemming and hawing and not saying anything there, but you'll know it when you see it. If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, you need to be, because that's where the news is going to break officially when it does break. For those of you on the pond right now, you will not see any difference whatsoever. The show will still be, and always will be, live at 9 p.m. Eastern Tuesday nights. That's all I can say about that. And I love that. And I love them all. And if you've ever been on the pond, and I was talking to somebody tonight who used to be on the pond, and through the course of their professional life, likelihood, can't be on the pond right now. And they miss being on the pond. And I miss some of the people that were on the pond who are no longer with us. And yeah, but that's another fun story, right? So, stay tuned. That's all I got to say. I mean, there's a lot going on. A lot going on in the world. I'm just happy to be a small part of yours. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mail Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. Please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mallard.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guest and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mallard Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mallard at checkout of DuckPondShop.com, where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mallard at checkout, DuckPondShop.com. Until next week, stay safe and keep quacking.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.